Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hi, friends. Today, we are joined by Ashley Doro. Ashley is someone who I personally turn to and love following and just feel privileged that I feel like I can call her a friend too. Ashley has a background in being a costume designer for film and television and started her own blog focusing on plus size fashion. But there's so much more reasons why I follow Ashley. As I was first, of course, attracted to her feed, being a plus-size woman, embracing her body and fashion. There's a depth to her work that I don't find in all of the plus-size fashion feeds I follow and people I follow. There's a transparency that she brings as a mother, as a woman, as someone who struggles with body image and mental health, and who's someone's really trying to break up with diet culture. So I'm so honored and excited to have this conversation and spend this time with the one and only Ashley Doro. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. That was so sweet to hear all those kind words. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here and hear your voice. I feel like I have watched your stories for a long time and I'm like, oh my God, we're like actually talking right now. This is kind of fun.
I know. It's really fun. And we've been in some of the same circles and have done some projects. So it's been a couple years. It's maybe like a year and a half that since we've really been connected. So, but we've never really just talked. We've been in like text message threads, but never talking threads. Yes. So this is wonderful. But there's so much I love about you, but I would love to start by hearing a little bit about your experience before you got into blogging with fashion, because I think it's so exciting. And of course, people are so attracted to like the film industry and what that was like.
Oh, yeah. I graduated college in 2010, and I actually, it took me a while to get through school, but I ended up doing my issues with school had to do with the fact that I could never really figure out something that I loved.
Yeah.
School was hard for me because I am the type of personality, like I like to be passionate about every single thing I'm doing. Do you know what I mean? So like a math class for me was torture because I'm like, this doesn't fulfill me in any way, shape, or form. So it was very hard for me. It was very hard for me to get through school. So that being said, I finally decided on a journalism major. I got into the University of Georgia, Grady College of Journalism.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I mean, trust me, I hit rock bottom a few times before that. To be quite honest with you, I feel like it was a miracle that I got in. I actually got denied some of the easiest colleges and somehow got into that college. I feel like there's always a plan that we don't know about. So I ended up in the journalism program at UGA, and I ended up meeting, I originally was going to be broadcast journalism. And then I met one of the professors of the journalism program, and he was like, if you want to be creative, you need to be in my program, which is telecommunication arts. And I'm like, well, what does that even mean? Like, nobody knows what that means when they see that on the paper as an option. And he was like, oh, it's basically film and TV production. And I'm like, what? Okay.
If it was called that, I would have signed up.
So I was like, absolutely. So I switched to his program within the journalism school, and it ended up being life-changing and amazing for me because it was a small program. I ended up meeting my now husband in that program, and it just allowed me to write and allowed me to direct, produce all of these projects all the time. And I just fell in love with creating, basically. Then my husband and I graduated, and I remember thinking during that last senior year, I'm like, I really wish I would have gone to fashion school at some point, because I realized my underlying inspiration for most of my storytelling was like the clothing. So like I wrote this short film for one of our projects based on the fact that I really just wanted to put like a guy and a girl in super like vintage looking like funky rollerblades and windbreakers. And like I had like this whole vision of what I wanted them to look like. And then I had to build a story around it. So it's so funny because I actually won like a writing award for that short film, which was like, I was like, really? Because all I wanted was the clothes. It was so funny. So I remember thinking like, I'm never going to be able to do like fashion stuff because I don't have that degree. And that is one thing that I just, if you're listening to this, like, do not let like your college degree, your major or anything stop you from trying to do what you really want to do, because guess what? It doesn't matter. And also things are gonna, if you put, I'm a huge believer in manifestation. So if you put things out there, like what is supposed to happen is I strongly feel will happen. So I've been talking about it a while, and right when we graduated is when the film industry just started booming in Atlanta.
Yeah.
So Wes, my husband, got a job on a movie working in the front office. And then we graduated college right when the film industry started booming. And my husband got a job on movie here, just working in the front office. And they, so when they hire the front office, they're like just starting the very beginning process. So a few months later, they're like, hey, we need somebody who knows where the malls are in Atlanta. And, you know, it's like a good, has good work ethic and stuff. And he was like, oh, I know exactly the person. And they were like, okay, we just need to bring her in for 1 week. We need her to drive the costume designer around Atlanta and take her shopping. And that's all it's going to be. So I, of course, like this is before I had an iPhone. I had started a day before the costume designer and my costume supervisor, her name was Joyce. She was like, okay, just a heads up, the costume designer is going to want to go to this store that, like, she gave me kind of like a heads up to what Betsy, the designer, was planning on doing. So I took that info and I kind of like ran with it, and I made like a whole itinerary agenda and I like printed out, I like went ahead, went to MapQuest and like printed out everything and had a whole plan so that when I picked her up at the hotel and I was like, okay, where do you want to go first? And she told me, I just like pulled out my little, I had like a little booklet I had made of everything. And she was like, who did that for you? And I was like, oh, just me. Like, I put this together. And she was like, oh my gosh. And so it started us off on like a really good vibe. And anyway, she ended up hiring, she hired me on to the whole movie. And I mean, she is the person I have to thank for all, basically my film career, because her name is Betsy Hyman. And she has done like huge name movies, costume designed for a really, really long time. She's a big name. And so every time I said like, oh yeah, I just worked with Betsy Hyman, you know, people would
take note.
So what I was a costume production assistant, costume PA. So I did that for about 2 years, and I would like literally end a show on a Friday, start one on a Monday, because there just wasn't not a lot of people here available either. Then I started working for somebody on a TV show. Her name was Agatha, and she bumped me up to shopper. And that is actually a union position, and it's basically shopping. So like my dream job. So, you know, that's when I really had to learn how to shop for a character and for several different factors.
Yeah.
You know, like their sizes and also the style of the TV show or the movie. And like, you know, what does this actor prefer when it comes to clothing and like things like that, like things you don't even really think about. And I'm sure I know for a fact I had some struggles with, you know, growing pains with that. But before I knew it, I, you know, just became like a really good shopper. And did that for a few years. Then I became an assistant costume designer, did that for a few years, which assistant designing can be very similar to being a shopper or a buyer in the film industry. But you're also, as an assistant designer, you're also scheduling like all of the looks for the, like if you're doing a TV show, you're styling like 100 looks a week. You're helping the, you're basically your costume designer's like right-hand man. So once I became assistant designer, that was like my most fulfilling, like I loved that job because I worked with a really awesome costume designer. Her name is Emmy. She is not who Emmy is named after.
I was just going to ask, is that your daughter's name? Your oldest daughter, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she, okay, so I love her so much. I 100% like would name my kids after her. But I'm all about family names. And so my grandfather's grandmother, her name was Emmeline.
Aww,
and it was spelled the way that we spell it. And so when I told Emmy, her name's Emmy Holmes, when I told her, hey, I'm pregnant, you know, and we were talking about names, she was like, are you going to name her Emmy? Or no, I told her, I said, well, we've come up with Emmeline. And she's like, are you going to call her Emmy? And I'm like, yes. Aww. And then I told her, I was like, and we'll spell it the way that you spell it.
Oh, I love that.
So, cause she spelled, she does it E-M-M-I-E. So I'm like, we'll do it that way. But, so she was just really amazing. And I have to say that like the film industry is cutthroat and brutal, and you're working, depending on what your job description is, if you're on set or if you're not on set, if you're behind the scenes, like shopping and doing stuff, I mean, you can work 14 to 17 hour days, 5 days a week. You're making a ton of money, which is kind of what keeps people going, I think. And you're getting paid every Friday. You get your health insurance covered through the union. And like, you know, it's a pretty sweet gig, but it's also soul sucking. And a lot of those people that you end up working for and working with don't have personal lives. Like they don't have relationships. They don't have families and children, and they don't have a lot of friends. And so what I found is I kept working with people that I'm like, oh, I do not want to turn into this person. Like, I don't want, like, there's no balance here. Like, I am literally never home. You know, there just wasn't any balance. So when I started working for Emmy, I actually was on the cusp of leaving the industry, and that was in 2013.
Before you go there, I want to ask a few things going back to like, you were so into fashion. Had you always been into fashion?
Yes. So okay. I can remember being in my childhood home, in my room, and just like trying on different outfits throughout the day. And my mom actually says, she's like, Ashley, you used to change your outfit like 5 times a day. And I actually can remember like specifically a few of my favorite outfits, which is hilarious to me. I mean, my top favorite outfit, I can picture it right now in my head. I know exactly what it was. It was neon green denim shorts and this tank top, like a sleeveless top that was white, and it had neon different colored polka dots all over it. Something about that was just like my favorite outfit. I guess I just felt like really cool. And I don't know if where you grew up, if you guys ever had Upton's, but we had this store called Upton's, and it was like my mom once a quarter, she would pick us up from school and take us shopping there for school clothes. And it was like my favorite memory. Yes. Yeah, so I've always had like a love for fashion, a love for dress up. There's old pictures of me with like crazy outfits on. And then I think it kind of turned into, you know, as I got older, I kind of lost that passion and that love for it because was noticing that my body was a lot different than my friends. I was having like a hard time fitting into clothes when we would go shopping. I kind of lost that. Like, so when I was in sixth grade, it was cool to wear JNCOs. Do you know what those are?
No.
Okay,
I know, because so, I got you. You had me on the neon. I had all the neon as an 80s, 90s kid, but no.
What year were you born?
79.
Okay, so I was 86. So you were probably in high school for this. So or maybe a little bit later, but the parachute denim pants, like the really wide leg, like skater jeans.
Yeah. The raver pants. Okay. I wasn't that old.
Yeah. So JNCOs. Okay. So that was like in my school, that was the cool thing to wear. And like, I knew that they would, I think I'd even tried a pair, like wouldn't fit me. And so I just kind of like, I let the fact that I didn't fit into like society's standard body size, but I kind of let that take over and take away my passion for, you know, dressing. And I think from that point on, I kind of was always trying to just find something that fit right and that I didn't feel ugly in, you know?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, there was a point in high school where I was, you know, very careful about what I was eating. I was going to Weight Watchers. I would take, you know, I would stop eating the lunches at school and I would take a Slim Fast bar and I would actually, I don't want this to be triggering for anyone, but I would like take the Slim Fast bar, the cookie dough Slim Fast bars. Those were like my favorite. And I would cut them up into 6 pieces and I would put them in little Ziploc bags and I would allow myself to eat that one bar like throughout the day. Oh. And that's what I would do instead of like eating a real lunch. And by my senior year, I kind of got to a point, maybe it was more like sophomore, junior year. I got to a point where I had some good friends during that time and I got a little bit more comfortable in my skin for a moment. And I like started dressing like how I wanted to more. Like I got a little bit more back into fashion for a little bit, but like the most frustrating thing for me during that time, when I think about how I dressed versus how I wanted to dress, was like, I was so into thrift store shopping and vintage shopping and like really cool retro looks mixed with like modern day looks and stuff like that. But I could never find like what I really wanted in my size. So I had to just kind of like work with what I had. And I would spend so much time searching thrift stores to try to find like some oversized old vintage shirt that I could like cut up and make it fit me and like things like that. And then I think I kind of gave up again after I graduated high school. I was like, all right, now I'm going to college. And I remember just feeling completely lost in myself to begin, like beyond the fashion. Like I would go to get dressed and I'd be like, I don't know what to wear because I don't think anything looks good. Like I hate what I look like, but also I hate these clothes, you know, like it was just like,
I think everything that you've shared is so, so relatable. And that's why I wanted to ask about fashion because you had said you found fashion again. And I had wondered, and it is so relatable when you exist in a smaller body, you have access to fashion, to everything, beyond the neon polka dot, you know, it's like everything is there and it sparks that interest and excitement and identifying who you are and where you want to be in the world with your clothing. And then especially when I was growing up and you were growing up, they're just wasn't accessibility to anything beyond like what our moms were wearing at Lane Bryant. And, you know, it was so limiting. And so here you had struggles with food and your body image. And then and I feel like sometimes it's like people walk into our lives and that teacher was like, come to my class. And so you get this opportunity and then it ends up landing you in the film industry. So then my next question is, did you ever, as you're finally, yes, it's a job where you're working 12 hours a day and it's so much, but it's also where you wanted to be for a while within that time when it was exciting and it was where you wanted to be and it was so like everything you wanted. Did those images of struggling with your body and body image and fashion working in this industry that's very much about what you look like, did that creep in?
100%. So I would say my 20s, that whole 10-year period was the height of my body dysmorphia and disordered eating and body image issues, 100%, and orthorexia major. So,
and that's working out? to lose weight?
Orthorexia is the obsession with like health and wellness and what you're putting in your body and eating clean and not eating other things and like letting it. It's when it completely rules your life. So like for me, and also that can play a lot into somebody who has like OCD and OCD tendencies and things like that, because it gets you. So for me, I went through a lot of phases of heights, of being in a very disordered state with all of my health. But, you know, like one of my periods of time when it was bad is when I hit a few times in my life, I hit rock bottom, which I'm not going to go into. But what I'm realizing now, I'm 30, almost 34, through doing these sessions with Stephanie Dodier, which I'll talk about more in a minute, I have realized that most of the time when I went into these disordered states, it was after something traumatic happened.
Yeah.
And so it was almost like I was trying to find control over something. So some of these moments looked like working out 6 days a week for 2 or 3 hours at a time, logging every single meal, counting every single calorie, and being on like a tight schedule of what I was putting in my body, that's kind of a picture of orthorexia. So being around the film industry did not help, because to be quite honest with you, the people that you're working alongside are just typically like normal everyday people. It's not like you're being, you know, forced to stare at like supermodels all day.
Right. The crew and the team. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, going to shop for people, you know, I always in the back of my head had a thought like, isn't this crazy? I'm spending, you know, $100,000. I have probably spent $100,000 on this one actress for this season of TV, and like nothing that I've bought her, I would ever be able to buy for myself.
Yeah.
You know, I remember working for a designer once who will go unnamed. We were waiting on casting for an actress, and we got the casting really late. Like, I think we probably got it on like a Tuesday, and we were going to start shooting her on Thursday. So we knew we were going to be in like a tight timeline. And she had heard rumors that who they were casting was like a size 12, and she was like distraught. Meanwhile, telling me these things, and I'm looking at myself going like, oh my God, I'm a size 12, 14. Like, who does she think she's talking to? But like, if that had happened right now, my response to that would be completely different. But at the time I was probably like 25.
Right.
And I think I just like, I mean, it was so, fat phobia was so ingrained in me that I just am like, uh-huh, yeah. And so like, I kind of accepted that as like, oh, I need to be ashamed because I am not worthy of these designer clothing. Like, like I'm not worthy of anything because I'm not that like size range, right, which is such a problem. And it took me so long, you know, to like, see that is not right. And I think that is why I'm so passionate about my message and what I do, because it's like, if I had just known like, hey, being a size 12 is actually no different than being a size 2 or than being a size 20, you know, like maybe I wouldn't have hated myself for so long. So it's just, it's a problem. And definitely in Hollywood and in the industry, it's still like, if we get a plus size actress casted, you know, everyone kind of has a freak out moment. Like, oh God, where are we going to shop for her? And, it's like, part of it's like, you can't really blame them because we haven't had these options, but now it's like, okay, we're starting to get more options. So also plus size people are like people too. And we deserve the same amount of respect that somebody in a smaller body size deserves. So it's still, you know, Hollywood and film, it's all very fat phobic society that, you know, there's a lot of work to do, but I feel like we're making progress, hopefully.
Yeah. Thank you so much for all you've shared there. I really appreciate it. I think, you know, we look at your career as like, oh my gosh, it looks so glamorous and so exciting. But when you really unpack it, well, yes, it was exciting. There's so much that you have to battle with when you exist in this body that doesn't look like the bodies that you are dressing for and the actors that you are working with. And that puts so much more pressure and can be really triggering for someone who has struggled with their body and body image. So we were talking and you were pregnant with Emmy. And I know from following you and things that you have shared working, and we'll talk about, you mentioned Stephanie earlier, you've been really open and kind of working through your own history with, you know, breaking up with diet culture and disordered eating. You had shared in one of your recordings that when you worked with your doctor, your OB, they had mentioned that you were gaining too much weight. Can you share a little bit about that experience? Because it's so relatable to our audience and a lot of the things that we talk about here on the podcast.
Absolutely. So one thing to note here is that before I got pregnant with Emmy, that was another time in my life where I was at like a height of my orthorexia and disordered eating and all of that. I will say that none of that stemmed from any sort of trauma, but it was just, I got married in 2013. And that's another sidebar here. I am very passionate about the wedding industry with plus size brides and stuff, because that was a huge, I probably would have been, if I had been evaluated for the 6 months before my wedding, I would have been diagnosed with an eating disorder, hands down. So, but it was all because of what I was used to seeing and, you know, what makes a beautiful bride, or what, like the imagery that we have all seen. And I just kept telling myself, I don't want to look back at my wedding photos and hate them. And guess what? Now I look back at my wedding photos and I'm sad because I am like, and to somebody, and here's another like a hard thing that we face is that everyone around me was applauding me because I look, you know, I was a size 10, 12 as somebody who was barely eating 600 calories a day.
Oh my gosh, Ashley. Oh my gosh.
So to everyone else though, like, because they're just looking at, oh, you're a size 10, 12, like they're thinking, like, it's not an obvious thing to people.
Oh, you look so great. Oh, look at you. Yes. You look so beautiful. Oh, what are you doing? What are your secrets? Yes. So it encourages this disordered behavior. Yeah.
Well, and it's like, I was getting a lot of like, oh, your willpower. Oh my goodness. Like you are just,
you're so strong.
You're so strong for like keeping yourself and all that stuff. So we did the wedding, we went on our honeymoon, and I wore like, you know, bikinis and stuff, but I was so self-conscious in them. Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, I look at the pictures now and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then, you know, I went back to work, whatever. The other thing about the film industry is it's really easy to throw yourself into work and not deal with your actual personal issues. And so that's probably how I just like got through my 20s. Let's see, we were married for about a year and a half before we decided we were ready to have kids. And that summer before, I remember looking in the mirror and being disgusted with what I saw and found another new like lifestyle change / diet plan that took everything to the next level for me, which is not, it's very dangerous. I feel like, I almost don't even want to say the name of it.
Don't say it. It just put you on a different path. Yeah.
Yeah. And it, you know, it encouraged social media as a way of staying accountable, which then encouraged before and after photos on a daily basis or like a weekly basis. It just was really, really, really bad for my mental health. But I thought it was great at the time, you know, and
now you have hundreds of people online applauding. Yes. Yeah. If not thousands. Yeah.
So then, so that was like June, July that summer. Then by December of that same year is when we decided we were ready to start trying. And to be honest, one of the reasons why I was doing that whole diet was because I thought I needed to lose weight. I wanted to lose weight and be at a certain weight range for when I got pregnant so that I would not gain a whole bunch of weight was what I thought. The crazy idea in the back of my head, right?
And no one tells you that if you lose a lot of weight right before you get pregnant, your body, what it does is it's been starving itself. So the minute you get pregnant and start nourishing your body in healthy, wonderful ways that we should always be nourishing our body, you gain a tremendous amount of weight quickly. Yeah. But that's never talked about and no one is ever prepared for that. And there's so much misinformation in the medical community. So continue, my friend.
Yes. Okay. So it took me a while to get pregnant, actually. And I'm not a doctor, but I do think that not nourishing your body has something to do with whether or not your
100%
body is going to respond to pregnancy.
Were your cycles regular?
They were. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never had irregular cycles ever. It's just, I've always, no matter what, they've been pretty regular. So anyway, I get pregnant and I'm immediately nauseous. So like sick, nauseous, not feeling good. And the only thing that my body was craving that I could hold down was like carbs and cheese. Mm-hmm. The two things I had cut out, I was only eating protein, like lean protein and vegetables, basically. So I'm like, oh my God. Bread and cheese. This is going to destroy me. But, you know, I think it's also something about caring for someone else besides yourself. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to like deprive this baby and I'm not going to, I mean, if it's the only thing that's making me feel good at this point, like I'm just going to eat. So I kind of like had to let myself, let my guard down a little bit with, as far as like quote unquote nutrition was going for that. And sure enough, I would say by 20 weeks, I probably had gained 40 pounds. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, my doctors. So I struggle with this because I did like that OBGYN practice. However, and it's also like, you don't want to blame people for being like innately fat phobic. Because that's like what we've all been taught. So it's like, I loved my doctor, but looking back, I know that I talked a lot about working out and weight gain. And so I think maybe she probably felt a little bit more comfortable talking about it with me as well. But it still is a really good example about how messed up and how the weight stigma issue is like such a big issue. So every time I'd go in there, we'd talk and, you know, I feel like I was going for like every 4 weeks or every 5 weeks for a checkup. And it's like the nurses would take your blood pressure, weigh you, all that. And then like always, the nurses always had a comment about my weight gain. And then it was just always very weight focused. But anyway, so once my second trimester started, I started getting really lightheaded all the time. And I had just kind of started not being nauseous anymore. So I was starting to eat more salads again, like more lean protein and vegetables. Cause my doctor had just told me like, hey, like you need to cool it on the, I mean, that's definitely exactly what she said. you need to cool it on the weight gain because you're already at your maximum for the whole pregnancy. And, you're just now starting your second trimester. And I was like, okay, well, what do you suggest? And she said, probably don't need to be eating much, you know, many carbs and definitely not in the afternoon or the evening. And I was like, okay. So in my head, I'm thinking like, no problem. I got this.
Your head, it's like, okay, no carbs. Yeah. And so did she unpack that at all? Of like, do you want to talk to a nutritionist or here are some nutritional guidelines? It was just like, you need to cut out carbs. Yeah. So there's a difference between, yes, we're seeing a lot of weight gain in the beginning of pregnancy. There's a difference in talking about, okay, Ashley, can you do a food journal for me if that's not triggering? Can we look at your nutrition? What are you eating? You know, I know you need to eat and you're nauseous, but here are some other options. There's a difference between that conversation and addressing some concerns about rapid weight gain and compared to what your doctor did. So while you can still love her and I, you know, that's fine. What she did was not beneficial for the health of you and your pregnancy.
Well, so then I started eating salads again, because I was actually like, oh, these taste good. Like, you know, and then within a couple weeks, I was just like lightheaded all the time. And my blood sugar just like kept being really low. And I'm like, what is happening? One night I ended up in the ER because I felt really scared. I was like, I don't know what's happening. So I was in the ER, and the ER doctor, a probably 45-year-old male, comes in. They check the baby. They check all my blood work. They're like, everything looks good. Your blood sugar's low. You know, what are you not eating? Is what he asked me. And I was like, oh my God, no, I'm already like, I've already gained 40 pounds at this point. Like my doctor said, I can't gain any more weight. Like I'm eating vegetable, you know, I'm eating what I can. And he was like, you need to eat bread. You need to eat cheese. You need to eat carbs. You need to eat. And if it's hourly, you need to eat. Like, you are not, your body's not getting what it needs. That's all this is. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah. And if you're not getting what you need, your baby's not getting what they need.
And it just kind of blew my mind. Like, okay, well, this doctor, you know, this doctor's office full of women have made me feel, have encouraged the feelings that I already had. And then this ER doctor, who's a man, comes in and is like, no, you need to eat. It just was like eye-opening. Like, wow. Okay. So, you know, and this also plays into what I'm a huge believer in. God, I feel like we could talk for 5 more hours about this, but like, I'm a huge believer in like, you got to advocate for yourself in medical situations, because to be quite honest with you, my numbers were so good. And with that weight gain, like it was not a medical issue. Like there was no reason for my doctor to be like, wow, you need to cool it on the weight gain. Like there's so much weight stigma in the medical field, and it's just bizarre. So,
but I do love that you shared that you love that practice, because I think a lot of people feel that way, you know, this confliction of, but I really like my doctor, but what they're saying doesn't sound right to me. So it's okay to like your doctor and realize that they're not the best care provider, especially for your maternity care. So I love that you shared that. They might be the greatest for your like annual exam, but they might not be the best for maternity care. And acknowledging that and then advocating for yourself is so important.
It's so important. And it's like you know what, I get this message a lot from women who are saying like, I'm either they're trying to get pregnant or they already are pregnant and they don't, they feel kind of like the same way I did with that practice. Like I like my doctor, but she brings up my weight all the time. And I'm like, listen, there's nothing wrong with going and trying another doctor. Like do yourself that favor and try, like go see somebody else and see if you like that experience better, because I feel like we have been taught to, not to discredit doctors in the medical world, but like a lot of us, until we have experience, like until we might have like a negative experience, we are just so like, okay, sure. Yeah. Whatever the doctor says is right. And when really like we need to be taking the information they give us and really like thinking about it and doing our research and knowing what our options are. So
been conditioned to believe that we should be treated poorly. And that is not the case at all.
Absolutely. So let me just share this. So when I got pregnant with Pearl, So, you know, Emmeline, we had a lot of medical issues with Emmeline. So, and actually I was very displeased with how everything was handled at that hospital that was tied to that practice. And I just thought, you know what, with Pearl, I just want to start fresh. I want to go to a different hospital. I want to go to a different practice, all that. So I started seeing a different OBGYN. And do you know, I was probably a solid 50 pounds heavier starting weight with Pearl's pregnancy. And not one time during that pregnancy did anybody talk about weight with me.
Yeah.
Not one time. And that's without me even like saying, I mean, that's before I really kind of knew that it was such a big issue within myself. So, I mean, now it's like I go anywhere and I'm like, hey, before you even try, don't talk to me about weight because I'll fight you on it. But no, it's just, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. And I feel like if there's a real health problem that is being caused by, you know, your weight and things like that, then it's a discussion that you can have. But something that Stephanie Dodier taught me is that if you do see your doctor and they seem to be very concerned about your weight, or you have a health issue and they tell you the only answer is for you to lose weight, what you should do is ask them, okay, I understand what you're saying, but also I just have to know, like, what would you tell me if I were in a smaller body size?
Yep.
Tell me exactly what you would tell that person. And I think it's just like, you know, it's just so mind blowing that we even have to advocate for ourselves like this, but we do. So
we do. I'm just popping in to say that I've been where you might be today. Plus size, pregnant, and discouraged by all the negative information online about what it is like to have a plus size pregnancy. Over the past 7 years, as a certified childbirth educator, I've supported thousands of plus size people during pregnancy, and I've poured all the information I've gained into a guide that will support you. Get the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide today at plussizebirth.com. Be sure to enter coupon code PLUSMOMMY to get 20% off your guide. You can also get the audiobook version that I recorded just for you. Stop Googling and start feeling empowered today. Now, let's get back to the show. Oh my goodness, Ashley, like I love all that you've shared, and you've shared your story with us and our journey, and it's so powerful. But I want people to know, like, you were just featured in JCPenney's and, you know, got a huge brand deal. And so now you've had this whole story that I think so many of us can relate and have literally walked in your shoes, maybe not working for Hollywood, but, you know, they've had these experiences of being a young girl and not finding anything to wear, being in a job where you struggled with body image and heard comments about other people when they're like, no, are you not looking at me? I'm the same size of the person you're mocking in the next room. Like, we can all relate to so much of what you've shared, but you took a different path, right? You wanted to, you know, be a mom because you had shared that working in this industry, it was so many hours, and you really wanted to tune into your family. So you started the House of Doro blog, and I'd love for you to share a little bit about that and how that has kind of propelled your life in this whole way. And now you live the dream that you've built the dream, and you've done it.
Well,
and I find that
so
inspiring. No, I know, but you took a leap of faith, and now you embody plus size fashion, and you get these amazing brand deals, and you go to Fashion Week in New York, and you are so well known and loved and adored, and you've carved out that space for yourself because you worked in an industry that wasn't going to do it for you. So share a little bit about that. As I know we've been talking a long time, but I've so loved your story and your journey, but I want to end it on, but now this is what you've built.
So I first started my blog because I was still working in the film industry. I had had our first daughter, Emmeline, and I just realized this is not working. I never get to see my daughter. I'm completely engulfed and consumed in the work that I'm doing. And it just was not, it's just not what I wanted to do anymore. And so I started thinking, okay, what in the world can I do? I've worked so hard for 8 or 9 years to like build this career, and now I don't know what to do with it. And I actually had a friend mention that her friend was a fashion blogger. And I was like, oh, there's no way I could do that. There's no way that I could do that. But she kind of planted the seed for me. And so I kind of started following more bloggers. And the more people I saw, the more I realized, like, where are the people that look like me? And where are the moms with messy houses? And where are, like, why is Scary Mommy the only page I can go to and feel like, you know, like I'm not alone in this? Like,
wait, yeah, I have to piggyback on what you just said, because I think you just nailed on, like, I'm like, oh, wait, this is so why I love following House Adoro, because it's not just the gorgeous fashion photos and you in New York looking like absolutely drop dead gorgeous on the Brooklyn Bridge. It's the next photo or the next story that I watch is like your messy kid's playroom that looks exactly like mine. And you just being like, I just got to make it through the next, like until bedtime. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, I feel so seen. So yes, thank you.
And it's like, nobody wants to, I mean, sure, there is a time and a place for like the beautiful Instagram accounts, the beautiful photography, all of that. Like I, from an artistic standpoint, I love those. And I think people have been doing it for a while. It's a true art and I have respect for that. But social media has turned into something where like people are filling their daily lives with, they're consuming this content like so often. And I just know for me, like from my personal perspective, I was like, you know, I had been following a bunch of bloggers for only a couple months. And I'm like, why do I suddenly feel like my house has to be completely perfect all the time? Like, why do I feel bad that I didn't get the laundry done today? And like, you know, you start thinking like, wait, why do I feel like I need to get Botox? Why do I feel like I need to be like, what? I don't, you know, and it just, but more than anything, I couldn't find anybody that like embodied what I could not find anybody to relate to be honest. So like body, like including body size. So that's really where it started. And I also felt like I had, you know, I went through a lot. We still go through a lot with Emmeline's medical stuff. And I just felt like I had a lot to share. And maybe I could, you know, by having a platform to write on my blog, I could reach other moms going through the same kind of hardships as us with like the medical stuff and all that. So I didn't really know like where I wanted to go, but I finally just like, I just did it. Like I just bought the domain for the year. And I was like, you know my first few posts might suck, but whatever, I'm just doing it.
I love it. And then Ashley, just real quick, cause I know people are going to wonder, what does Emmy have, her heart condition?
Oh, yes. She has Schoen's complex, which is the underdevelopment of the left side of the heart. It's a very rare condition, and it's also very rare for a female to have it and also not be paired with another type of syndrome.
Wow.
So when she first got diagnosed, we were told, you know, since she is female, it's very highly likely that she also has some other issues, and she does not have it. So her situation is very rare. It's like, and that's the thing about CHD and heart defects. It can be so unique to everyone. So Schoen's complex for another kid might look slightly different than what she has. So it's kind of hard, but anyway, so she's got, like basically the valves on the left side of her heart are too small. And she also had she had coarc of the aorta, which is a very common thing. A lot of babies nowadays, I think most hospitals require that their oxygen is checked before they get discharged. But it's one of those hidden things that get missed a lot because I don't think that they used to check oxygen right before they left the hospital. Because it can be like it doesn't show up for a few days. So she had that as well in the heart. And
I know that, I mean, this would be a whole other episode of your pregnancy, birth, and postpartum stories. But I know that that was, a huge roller coaster that your family went on and month in the hospital and or longer than that. Like it was a huge, did that kind of also play a role in you wanting to step away from the film industry? And for people hearing a little one in the background, that's PJ, her youngest, that just got up from nap.
Yes, it definitely, it was a blessing that I was working in the film industry when all of this happened because I didn't have to go back to work and I chose when to go back to work. And it ended up being when she was 6 months old, that's when I realized like, wait, what am I doing? Like, I want to spend more time with her. But I kept being stubborn. I kept being like, you know, she's a normal kid. She's, you know, if she can be in daycare all day, then she's fine. Like, you know, I still had not really totally processed everything that had happened. She was on a feeding tube till she was 4 months old. Oh, I mean, wow. We had a lot of stuff going on. So yes, it definitely played a big part into it, but I don't think... That being said, like I have friends that have been in the same situation and they're fine with not being super involved during the day.
Oh yeah. Like Ashley doesn't judge. I don't judge. Like you do family situation. But if you have a medical crisis with a child and you still have to work full time to feed your family, we 112% support you. But we're just sharing Ashley's journey. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think that my hustle has stopped at all just from going from what I was doing to what I'm doing now. If anything, I'm working 10 times harder than I was, but it's because I just realized I never thought I would be this type of mom, but I realized, okay, I'm making like special trips to like see my kid at daycare during the day. Like, why am I like, I actually like heart issues aside, like I didn't realize like I want to be the one that's feeding her lunch. Like I want to do these things. And to be honest, like maybe that comes from the fact that while we were in the ICU, like I had no idea if I was going to get that chance. So I do think it kind of helped put things in perspective for me, as wild as Pearl is. Every day as I'm rocking her and putting her down for her nap, I love it. You know what I mean? And it's like in my most frustrated moments, I'm still like, okay, I'm here. I'm doing what I'm called to be doing. You know, like I feel like I'm doing the right thing. So it was a tough plunge to say, okay, I'm going to stop taking movie jobs. Also, because that's where our health insurance comes from. But it's just done wonders for our family dynamic as far as like someone's here during the day where, you know, like there's somebody running our household. So basically, it was a choice I made, and I'm really trying. My goal is to be able to be, you know, an involved mom, but also work full time and kind of do it all, even though people say you can't have it all. I feel like you can. if you try, I mean, you know, I don't know. No, it's hard.
I feel all that you're sharing. And I feel like I want to have you back on for like a part two where we can talk about like plus size fashion and motherhood and all that stuff. But I've really enjoyed.
Oh my God, I'm so down.
Okay, we'll do it. And I know that your little ones need your attention now, but
yes,
I've so appreciated all that you've shared, your journey to where you are now. Just give us like your elevator pitch about House of Doro so people get an idea about it. And then I want to encourage people to go, but I also really want to give a shout out to Stephanie Dodier and the work that you did. Basically, you recorded therapy sessions on addressing your history with food and exercise and body image.
So this last year, since after I had Pearl, was a real eye-opening year for me when it comes to what I thought I had figured out what my deal with body image was. This year, I was like, whoa, wait a minute. There's so many more deeper issues here. And it got to the point where I was like, I don't know how to talk about this with my audience in a meaningful way or an impactful way, because I'm not an expert and I need to learn and I want to learn this. And then I was like, if I do this, I'm going to have to be really good at remembering our sessions and stuff. And then I was like, you know what? Why don't I just record it live? Because there's nothing that's going to happen in that therapy session that I would not want to share publicly anyway, because I just feel like we've all been through a lot of the things that we're talking about.
I mean, I love you and thank you for doing that. But that's the last thing. I mean, people even just identifying that you want therapy, but then you're like, you know what? I'm going to record this live and I'm going to share it. I love that you did that. So thank you. I mean, I felt like I watching it myself, I was just like, I was feeling like I was in therapy. I was getting choked up. I had to stop at points. It is intense. So I really encourage people to check it out, and it's all on your IGTV.
Yes, it's all on my IGTV, and we are not done. There will still be more episodes coming. I'm actually talking to her tomorrow for another session. So the journey to intuitive eating is pretty much the basis of our therapy session. And yeah, so if you're interested, my blog is houseofduro.com. We talk a lot about body image, confidence, how to dress your body, and also motherhood stuff. But even if you're not a mom, I feel like you might still want to hang out with me.
Yeah. So
I do a lot on Instagram. It's just at @Ashley_Doro, DOROUGH. And yeah, we have a lot of fun. I feel like I do a lot of fun segments during the week. So that's it, I think.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is fun. When you go to Ashley's feed, the first thing is OMG, did we just become best friends? 100%. to give you an idea of all the fun that you have, but also the realism. And I love you for all that and the realism that your kids need you right now. So we're gonna end, but
yes.
I just really, really appreciate all that you have shared. There will definitely be a part two. Ashley, tell people where they can find you beyond your Instagram.
Okay. So, my blog is houseofduro.com. You can check me out there or on Instagram. It's @Ashley_Duro. And that is it. I mean, I'm on Twitter and Facebook, but also while I'm speaking, Pearl has found a cup of Diet Coke and is currently playing in it and splashing it all over me.
All right, so we're going to go. On that note,
I love to keep it real. You should totally keep that in there.
Okay, we're leaving it. I'm just like, oh no, you poor thing. You got to go.
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye. I hope so. I adore you. Thank you so much, Ashley. Bye, PJ. Bye, Emmy.
Bye.